still have work to do and other permits to get, but this is an important landmark that we've just driven by.
Shell's plan to drill in the Arctic Ocean moves forward. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, FAA workers in Alaska respond to word of a deal to get them back to work.
It's just sad that they cost the taxpayers so much money because they couldn't do this 2 weeks ago.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you know a nonprofit executive or tribal leader who is at risk for job burnout? Nominate them for a Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical, which provides paid time away for personal renewal and growth. Go to Rasmussen.org for more information, but don't wait. Nominees must complete an application by October 1st. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
The Seward Highway has been closed in both directions due to a three-vehicle crash near Indian. Reports say two vehicles collided head-on and a third ran into the crash, leaving one dead and 14 injured, two of them seriously. Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says one of the vehicles involved appears to be a large van, which was full of passengers. Peters said some onlookers climbed rocks to get a better look, and one person broke a leg after falling off. The highway will likely be closed until around 7 p.m. The federal government has given conditional approval to Shell's plan to drill exploratory wells in the Beaufort Sea. The company wants to drill up to four shallow wells there starting next July. Environmental groups are calling it a dangerous and disappointing leap toward offshore drilling in the Arctic. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
The conditional approval is a big win for Shell. The company has been frustrated in its efforts to drill in the Arctic Ocean for several years. Pete Slaby, vice president at Shell Alaska, was cautious but enthusiastic about the news.
We still have work to do and other permits to get, but this is an important landmark that we've just driven by.
The oil company was getting set to drill in the Arctic Ocean in the summer of 2010, but the federal government halted that plan after the Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Environmental groups have repeatedly raised concerns that it would be too difficult to clean up oil in Arctic waters. Robert Thompson lives in Kaktovik and is with the group Resisting Environmental Destruction on Indigenous Lands, or Red Oil. He says based on the conditions he sees, cleaning up oil isn't realistic.
They can fool some people who live in other states, but I live in the edge of the Arctic Ocean, and even now there's ice piled up from last winter when we got pressure ridges when the ice moved. I don't believe anybody's going to say they can operate out there.
The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, Regulation, and Enforcement approved Shell's plan. The agency wouldn't offer anyone to talk about the decision, but in a press release, Bureau Director Michael Bromwich is quoted as saying, "All decisions on development in the Arctic are based on the best scientific information available." Environmental attorney Peter Van Tine says that science is thin.
The data gaps are simply monstrous, and they go to fundamental issues that limit the ability of this agency and the United States to make informed decisions. And to say otherwise is just simply dishonest.
But Shell Vice President Pete Slaby says the company has learned a lot from the Deepwater Horizon incident. A capping and containment system is what ultimately put an end to that disaster. And Slaby says Shell will have that type of system on site in the Arctic.
We've always designed our oil spill response, with knowing that we're going to be in a remote area. So we've got a very, very different philosophy than people had in the Gulf of Mexico, where you kind of fire department, get on the phone and call. We've said from the very beginning, and even before the incident in the Gulf of Mexico last summer, that we have to have our assets on place and deployed.
The company still needs several additional permits from other agencies before they can start drilling. Shell is also hoping to drill exploratory wells in the Chukchi Sea. The Department of Interior must complete a supplemental environmental impact statement on that plan before it can move forward. Slaby hopes that will happen in October. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Fite.
Furloughed workers are breathing a sigh of relief after Congress threw together a bipartisan deal today to reauthorize the Federal Aviation Administration's funding. The deal will put more than 70,000 transportation and construction workers back to work across the U.S. and 4,000 FAA employees, including 79 in Alaska. But for Alaska, some say the damage may have already been done. Dasha Eaton with member station KDLG reports.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid's announcement of a bipartisan deal to put FAA workers back to work is a relief to furloughed workers across the country, including 79 in Anchorage. Aaron Wilson is one of them. He's an electronics technician at the FAA's Anchorage Communication Engineering Center. He was furloughed on July 23rd and says he's looking forward to getting back to work.
I'm very glad that we'll be going back to work Monday. I have not been officially informed, though I have read multiple articles that say there is a deal in place. So that's very good news for not only myself, but everyone affected. But it's just sad that they cost the taxpayers so much money because they couldn't do this 2 weeks ago.
Alaska's congressional delegation implored leadership to fix the situation before it went on recess Wednesday. Senate Majority Leader Reid came through with the announcement that something was in the works Thursday. The FAA furloughed 4,000 employees nationwide, including the 79 based in Anchorage back in July, along with holding up the work of thousands of contract project workers. The partial shutdown halted airport construction projects across the state. The FAA estimates are worth about $6 million for nearly 2 weeks. Wilson says even though it looks like he and his colleagues will be back on the job soon, the loss of the critical window of time during Alaska's short summer construction season could have impacts.
Alaska has an extremely short construction season. We only have so long before we can do what we call groundwork. Once it starts freezing up, which is going to be starting pretty soon, the further north you go, you can no longer do any of that work. It's going to definitely put a slowdown on numerous efforts across the state, and we're talking projects from Ketchikan to Barrow to Dutch Harbor.
The FAA says those construction projects are in Anchorage, Barrow, Juneau, Kenai, Nanana, and Wasilla. The details of the bipartisan agreement are not yet clear, but Senate Majority Leader Reid said in a statement Thursday that this agreement does not resolve the important differences that still remain. Democrats and Republicans are at odds on a permanent extension of FAA programs, and as Wilson explains, the FAA has been operating on temporary funding extensions for years.
The Congress has not fully funded the FAA since 2007. We continually have been working under temporary funding extensions. The FAA reauthorization bill, which would have been a fully funded take care of this problem, has been just pushed aside for, like I said before, almost 4 years. So I just figured they were going to pass another temporary funding extension like they've been doing. I think there's been 20 of those passed so far.
It's been widely reported that Democrats and Republicans have been bickering over issues surrounding unions, and that the only way the Republicans would agree even to another temporary reauthorization of funding would be if the agreement included funding cuts to rural airports. One bright spot in a state more reliant on air transportation than any other in the U.S., none of those cuts are said to include rural airports in Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The details of the debt ceiling legislation signed into law on Tuesday are still emerging, but one thing is clear, Alaska is going to feel the effects. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Tuesday, the U.S. Congress passed a bill that cuts almost $1 trillion from federal spending and commits it to more cuts that will bring the total to more than $2 trillion. More than a third of the cuts already made are coming from defense spending, including Homeland Security, military construction, and Veterans Affairs. Pell Grant and student loan subsidies were not fully funded. Other cuts are still being worked out. Even without the details, Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce economist Neil Fried says he can predict one thing.
It's going to reduce, federal expenditures, probably some of the biggest declines in federal expenditures that we have seen in at least since World War II. And, because Alaska, about a third of our economy is tied to federal expenditures, It's very important for the state and could be a sort of a significant economic event, and probably more so for us than just about any other state in the country, with the possible exception of states like Maryland and Virginia.
Fried says federal budget cuts are already being felt. He says a few programs have ended, offices have closed, and the Federal Aviation Administration is partially shut down.
We've been seeing small things that have occurred out there. USDA offices, now FAA. We've heard about the, some of the things like essential air service and little things like that. But those are pretty small right now compared to, I think, what we might be seeing.
Fried says it'll be a while before Alaska feels the full effects.
Some people believe it will be in fiscal year 2014 where we will really begin to see it. But I suspect we will begin to feel some of it this coming year with a new fiscal year.
Congress has assigned a bipartisan committee the task of finding another $1.4 trillion in savings or increased revenues. The committee has until November 23rd to come to agreement. Congress has until January 15th to approve the committee's plan, or automatic across-the-board budget cuts will kick in. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Emonic Fish and Game Office shuts down.
We have a group of youth in the community here in Emonic that have targeted the fish and game offices with both harassment and vandalism.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again is making the best decision for herself and her baby. The mother has a better chance of regaining health and energy between pregnancies, and her baby has a better chance of being born on time and at a good weight. Talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Department of Fish and Game has announced they will close down their field office in the village of Emonic. Personnel there say they no longer feel safe. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson has more.
Each summer, the Department of Fish and Game opens their office in Emonic. It's at the mouth of the Yukon River. The office is a crucial part of the management strategy. It provides a point of contact for people in the lower river. It's also a strategic place to detect the first pulse of salmon runs.
The manager is here and doing a lot of the management work from this office, too.
That's Jeff Estenson, and he runs the Emonic office during the fall chum management season. Estenson says the situation right now has become untenable.
We have a group of youth in the community here in Emonic that have targeted the fish and game offices, and along with other different entities in the community as well. But they have been targeting the fish and game offices with both harassment and vandalism.
Estenson declined to give specific details about the recent incidents, saying it would make it more difficult to resolve the situation with the community. He did say that the harassment is nothing new, but it has escalated this season.
And as a result, fish and game here in Emonic has decided that we will close our Emonic field office Friday. And essentially, this is basically out of concerns for our staff's safety and well-being.
Estenson says some of the staff will be moved back to the main office in Fairbanks. Others like him and those running the test net will stay and continue to manage the fishery without an open location. He says it may be a bit of a challenge for the staff, but he says it's the public that will be most affected.
What's being lost is actually being able to be open for the public to come in and be able to take care of as permitting issues and things of that nature.
Estenson says that the office has contacted law enforcement about the issue. The move is not unlike a decision by health aides in the neighboring village of Nunamiqua. Last year, aides working at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation clinic there resigned their positions, citing threats of violence and harassment. They reopened the office months later after measures were taken by the tribe, the city, and law enforcement to make it safer for them. Estenson hopes that similarly, Fish and Game can return to the Emonic office next season.
We want to work very hard with everyone to make sure that happens. We've been here for quite a while in Emonic. We've certainly enjoyed our time here. We've developed very strong, professional relationships with the community, the infrastructure here, and also personal relationships.
The department says fishers can still get updates about commercial and subsistence openings on the Yukon River hotline, and the test fishery staff will continue to announce those openings over VHF radio. I'm Shane Iverson.
A steady stream of king salmon moving up the Yukon River past Eagle in recent days means Canadian border passage objectives will likely be met. As of yesterday, 44,200 Chinook had been counted by a state-run sonar near the border at Eagle. State biologist Steve Hayes says the third and final pulse of kings has been encouraging.
The agreed to lower end of the one-year interim management escapement goal range of 42,500 Chinook salmon has been met. In addition, Alaska is obligated to pass approximately 5,000 Chinook salmon or more across the border to fulfill the harvest sharing commitments. And based on the current projection that we have to date, we anticipate that that goal will also be met.
That's significant, as Yukon River Canadian King Salmon passage objectives were not met 4 out of the last 5 years. Yukon King runs have been consistently weak, and managers have relied on fishing restrictions to help get more salmon upriver. Hayes credits this year's success to additional fishing restrictions, including recent closures in the Eagle area. He says the effectiveness of a reduced net mesh size requirement implemented this year will take longer to determine.
The idea with that mesh size reduction was to hopefully put larger females into the escapement so that in the future that would produce more fish for returns.
Hayes says fishermen have reported catching smaller kings this summer, a sign the mesh size reduction is working. The bigger fish bounce off the smaller mesh, enabling them to continue upriver to spawn. It's not a pipeline, but a project announced today will get North Slope natural gas to Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the deal will provide relief to the community currently strapped by high oil prices.
Golden Valley Electric Association and Flint Hills Refinery are teaming up to truck North Slope natural gas to Fairbanks. The project is aimed at providing a lower-cost, cleaner-burning fuel alternative to oil. GVEA President and CEO Brian Newton says it makes sense for the two energy producers to work together.
Flint Hills and Golden Valley, as the two largest anchor tenants of the project, were natural partners in this venture. We'll be spending the next year doing some engineering work, and then we will move forward with the contract, and then we will start building the project with first gas delivered in 2014.
Newton says GVEA and Flint Hills have secured a supply contract with a North Slope gas producer, but cannot disclose the details yet. The plan is to truck in about 7 billion cubic feet of LNG per year. Getting set up is estimated to cost around $180 million. That includes construction of a liquefaction plant on the North Slope, a regasification facility in North Pole, and a fleet of 40 tanker trucks to move LNG. The project will provide at-cost natural gas to both partners. It'll feed a GVEA turbine generator in North Pole that currently burns high-priced crude oil. And Newton says that will lower the cost of power to consumers.
By switching the North Pole turbine from liquid fuel to natural gas, we'll save about 10% on the electricity bills.
Natural gas will also provide a lower-cost source of energy for the refining process at Flint Hills North Pole plant, a facility which has been financially compromised by high crude oil prices in recent years. Company spokesman Jeff Cook says bringing in gas is a good business move for the refinery.
Flint Hills is one of the only probably two refineries in the country that doesn't run and energize the plant on natural gas. So our energy costs are between 2 and 3 times higher than a typical refinery in the lower 48 and even the refinery at Nikiski that Tesoro has. So to us, it helps us be more competitive and really stay in business long term by lowering our energy costs.
Cook says there's no guarantee that the cost of petroleum products they make, primarily jet fuel, will go down, but he says natural gas could lead to local production of alternative fuels like propane and LNG diesel. Fairbanks Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says the deal's good for the community, but there's another part of the local energy picture to be considered.
Now the issue of distribution of gas becomes a much larger issue because of how do we get it to individuals' homes and businesses where it really makes the savings on space heating.
The Borough Assembly recently approved using state grant funds to study gas trucking and local distribution. Hopkins says a switch from oil and wood heat to cleaner-burning natural gas could reduce smoke that's landed Fairbanks on the Environmental Protection Agency non-attainment list for fine particulate pollution.
That needs to be addressed about just about the same time as trucked gas will be coming into our community. So about 2014, we have to demonstrate that we are reducing the particulate levels. And natural gas does that. If we get to 13,000 homes by the time attainment needs to be reached and it's actually connected up to people's furnaces and boilers and whatnot, it's been estimated that will reduce our particulates by 50%.
Hopkins says the task now is to help facilitate local gas distribution and a conversion to gas-fired heating. Golden Valley's Newton says there's capacity for the project to move additional LNG.
So we're hoping that other folks, maybe the university, Fairbanks Natural Gas, PetroStar, maybe will come on and say, hey, there's room in this project. The price will never be cheaper.
The idea of natural gas trucking has been on the radar in Fairbanks for several years. Local gas seller Fairbanks Natural Gas, which currently trucks in Cook Inlet LNG, first looked at the project. The latest plan to call for the voter-created Alaska Gasline Port Authority to purchase the company and finance the North Slope project. Voters will weigh in this fall on whether the Port Authority can pursue gas trucking. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com. Check the status of your application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for placing half in a college savings account and to add or change charitable donations. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
An orange-colored substance that washed up on the shores of the village of Kivalina and concerned residents that it might have been toxic is not man-made. Coast Guard Petty Officer David Mosley says it's not a petroleum substance. More tests are being conducted, but it might be a type of algae. Pictures taken by resident Maida Swan show an orange sheen across the harbor and close-ups of the matter on beaches in the village on the state's northwest coast, about 625 miles northwest of Anchorage. City Administrator Janet Mitchell told the Associated Press the village is requesting that an algae expert from the University of Alaska Fairbanks investigate. She also says some residents are dumping water collected in rain buckets for consumption because it too has a color. There will be a Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race next year after all. The Bethel-based mushing organization has hired a new race manager. From KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
For over 30 years, the K300 sled dog race has been held every January, running 300 miles along the Kuskokwim River. The $100,000 purse brings in top mushers from all over the world. But the race organizers weren't sure if they could hold the race in 2012 because they couldn't find a race manager. Now they say the crisis is over since they hired former Bethel resident Zach Fansler. The new announcement comes just a few weeks after the race committee gave a big media push announcing that the race might not happen. The committee says although they rely on over 100 volunteers for the race, they need a manager year-round. Longtime race chairman Myron Angstman says they had many qualified applicants step forward after the initial announcement, calling it a tremendous response. He says they were happy to pick a person with previous volunteer experience. Fansler is moving back to Bethel this month and will start work immediately. He first came to Bethel as a Jesuit volunteer about 10 years ago. He stayed for a few years, volunteering with the race at the Tulaksac checkpoint and as a dropped dog coordinator there. Fansler was also involved with the Bethel Actors Guild. He later pursued a law degree and has been living near Philadelphia, where he is originally from. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Telephones in Alaska became a little more expensive this week. As of Monday, regulatory fees increased on both landlines and wireless phones for all the state's phone companies. APRN's Dave Donaldson has more.
The regulatory fee increases are designed to provide more money to phone companies that can be directed toward keeping telephone service affordable in remote, expensive parts of the state. 3 years after the industry proposed the changes, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska last week approved hiking the network access fee and the Alaska Universal Service Fund. But there's a break available to some users. Lisa Phillips is Director of Regulatory Affairs for Alaska Communications. She says the increased fees will cover part of the expense of Lifeline, a phone service for low-income users. They'll also pay for public interest payphones, and they'll eliminate the money exchanged between phone companies for long-distance access. She says there's a trade-off with the increase, and that's where some customers can see an advantage.
Long-distance companies are required to lower their intrastate rates. So you'll see long-distance rates in the state of Alaska reaching parity with long-distance rates that you normally are paying to when you call the lower 48.
As an example, Take a phone company last month charging 14 cents a minute for an in-state call and 10 cents a minute for a call outside. Now, both calls will cost only 10 cents a minute. The fee increases will cover the reduction. The Universal Service Fund has increased by 7 times, from 1.32 to 9.5% of all local phone services. And the network access fee went up 25% to $3.75 per line per month, although it's a few cents less in Anchorage. Heather Kavanaugh, Communications Director for Alaska Communications, says it's the in-state callers who will see savings from the changes.
If you make approximately 60 minutes worth of in-state long-distance calls every month, you probably won't see much of a change. If you make more than 60 minutes of in-state long-distance calls every month, you'll actually probably see a decrease. And then if you call less than 60 minutes a month, then that's when you will see an increase.
The state regulatory system operates separately from the federal system, and although federal fees are similar, they're supplementary to the state fees. Phillips says she does not anticipate any further changes in the state regulations. However, there may be federal reforms coming. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The U.S. Court of Appeals is ordering the Forest Service to revisit its decision to offer 4 timber sales on the Tongass National Forest. The court sided with 2 environmental groups that challenged the sales on the basis of how the federal agency evaluates deer habitat. In a ruling issued on Tuesday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals determined that the Forest Service had not adequately explained its decision to approve the sales. Greenpeace and Cascadia Wildlands challenged the timber sales, citing concerns about the effect on deer and their predator, the Alexander Archipelago wolf. Larry Edwards is a campaigner for Greenpeace in Sitka.
The purpose of the lawsuit is to make the Forest Service go back and do its analysis right on these timber sales. And we believe that when the Forest Service does that, that it can't justify the volume of timber that it decided to log in these projects.
The court ultimately ruled that the Forest Service violated the National Forest Management Act. The Forest Service and U.S. Department of Justice declined to comment for this story. Alaska Forest Association Executive Director Owen Graham could not be reached for comment. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Dillingham, Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, Shane Iverson and Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.